The thing that separates or distinguishes a conductor from an insulator, or from a resistor for that matter, is how many free electrons, that is, electrons that are not tightly bound to the nucleus of their atom. If you have a material that has a lot of free electrons, a lot of loosely held electrons that are easily dislodged, as I've explained before, you have a good conductor. If you have a material that the electrons are somewhat free, but some of, you know, statistically some of them are free and some of them aren't, then you have a resistor. If you have a material that they're all very, very tightly held, then you have a good insulator. Insulators don't conduct electricity. There are substances which are not elements. Normally you think of metals as being elements, although there are alloys, but at least for the prime example being copper. But there are other things that conduct electricity, and there are really strange ways by which they do this. Sodium chloride, common table salt, is, by its crystalline structure, it's an ionic crystal that is very, very happy to remain what it is. It's very tightly held. Its electrons don't want to go anywhere. And water, believe it or not, is a good insulator, contrary to what you've heard. The reason water conducts is because water is impure. But if you get pure, really, really pure water, water that doesn't have any kind of ion contaminant in it, whatever, it makes a good insulator. If you take distilled water and you put a couple of electrodes in the beaker and put them in series with a 100-watt light bulb, plug it into the wall, the light bulb won't light. In fact, pretty much nothing will happen. But if you shake in a teaspoon of common table salt, which is also an insulator, even if you grow it into a crystal, it makes a wonderful insulator. But you put these two things together, what happens is the sodium chloride dissociates into a hydroxy group, if I remember right. And basically what you have in solution now is ionic compounds that are inside the solution, and they're very willing to give up their electrons and conduct electricity. So the whole understanding of how electricity flows through a conductor is all based around this notion of how easily electrons can be pulled out of their orbital by another charge, another electron jumping into that orbital and causing the thing to become unstable and reject its own electron. Well, okay, on to the next subject. I think I've pretty well covered that one. I show on the next panel pretty much the same circuit as before, except I've got a couple of meters in there. An ammeter measures current flowing through a wire, but in order for it to do this, it has to be wired in series. You'll notice that I have broken the connection, the bottom wire where the battery was connected to the resistor in the top panel, and wired in an ammeter. The ammeter tries its best to be a wire. It's not perfect. A real ammeter isn't perfect. But it tries to be a very low resistance resistor, effectively. The reason this is so is because it has to drop a little bit of voltage. That is, it has to have some resistance, and the current flowing through it will drop a small voltage. If you remember the Ohm's law equation that I gave, you will drop some voltage across a resistor that's in series with another one that's drawing current in the circuit. And that voltage, multiplied by the current that's flowing through the ammeter, is where the energy comes from to move the needle across the scale. It takes energy to do that. In this case, you're producing an electromagnetic field inside the meter on a coil that's movable, that's held in the vicinity of a magnet that's also inside the meter, and this is what causes the motion. If it wasn't for that energy being expended, there'd be no way to get a reading on the device. So it has to lose some energy. And then the way that it loses energy, the way that an ammeter loses energy, is it drops a little bit of voltage. It has resistance. I also show a voltmeter. The voltmeter is wired across the resistor, and the voltmeter is the exact opposite in terms of its characteristics of the ammeter. The voltmeter tries its best to be an insulator. It tries to be an open circuit. Excuse me. The voltmeter, being as near as it can be to an open circuit, also is imperfect. And it does draw a little bit of current. That is, it has a very high resistance, not an infinite resistance, but it has a very high resistance. When you work with these devices, you hope that the circuits that you're measuring, that the effect of the imperfections of the equipment that you use is so small as to be negligible. In the real world, that often is the case. But sometimes you actually have to take into account what the effect of your measuring instrument is doing to your circuit. Placing that voltmeter on this particular circuit will have no effect, assuming that the battery has a low enough impedance. The battery itself is not a zero-ohm thing. It would like to be. It would be the best battery in the world if it were. Unfortunately, real batteries have some resistance. If it weren't for that, if you took a flashlight battery and shorted it out, and the flashlight battery had absolutely no resistance whatever, the metal that you strapped across the battery would just explode in a fireball. There'd be so much current going through it. The point is, if you short out a flashlight battery, not much happens. Oh, it gets a little warm. The battery itself gets warm because it internally is resistive. And the resistance inside the battery and its own chemical reaction trying to produce electricity all kind of combine to dissipate heat energy. I mentioned this because everything that you encounter in the real world will be imperfect. And it will disagree from the calculations that you make if the imperfections are large enough. The ammeter that I've showed connected in the bottom of the circuit could just as well have been connected in any of the, in series with anything in the circuit. Instead of breaking the wire at the bottom and inserting the meter in the bottom, you could have left that wire alone and inserted the meter in the top. Breaking the connection in top and putting the ammeter in series up there. If you were to break the battery apart, have two cells on the top and two cells on the bottom, and put the ammeter between the two cells, you'd get the same exact current reading there. If you took a saw or something without losing any particles and managed to cut the resistor open and connect the meter in between the two ends of the now broken resistor, if you managed to get a good enough connection, you would read the same current. Doesn't matter where the ammeter is, as long as it's in the circuit. Now, a circuit that has multiple parallel paths, depending on which leg the ammeter is connected in, will read different things. But in a simple circuit such as this one, doesn't matter where the ammeter is, you'll still read the same current. Similarly, the voltage you read in this circuit, because it only has a battery and a resistor, the voltage you read is the voltage of the battery when read across the resistor. If you were to put the voltmeter across the battery, you'd read exactly the same thing. Interestingly enough, if you were to put the voltmeter across the ammeter, if we're talking first approximation here, where the ammeter is an ideal ammeter, it has no resistance whatever, if that were the case, you would not read any voltage across the ammeter. In point of fact, with a real ammeter, if you were to take your voltmeter and connect it across the ammeter, you would read a real small voltage. It's probably in the neighborhood of a tenth of a volt, but a tenth of a volt sometimes matters. It makes a difference in how some circuits work. On to the next subject.